You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. My guest today is Emily English, and with over a million followers on Instagram, she is taking the nutrition world by storm. With her unique blend of being a fully qualified and registered nutritionist with a degree from the prestigious King's College London, she mixes in her personable and realistic flair for making dishes that look mouth-wateringly good. Emily is someone who I personally think has cracked social media with her incredible work ethic and commitment to producing and curating a space which has mass appeal whilst also feeling totally relatable and achievable. That aside, I'm also a huge fan of hers, so I am absolutely thrilled to be able to have her on the podcast today. Welcome to the podcast. I am so happy that we've managed to make this happen because I know that you're probably one of the busiest people ever right now. So we've managed to secure you. It feels very special. And look, I am someone who's followed you for a long time. Like, I literally remember following you when you were just starting out and being like, this girl's going to be something. She has got it. And here we are now with like over a million followers, like I said, in your introduction, and just absolutely smashing it. So well done, firstly. I think that for me today, it'll be really interesting to start going back a little bit. I know that you've referenced on your socials a little bit about your relationship with food growing up and how that's kind of shaped your journey as a nutritionist now and how you now practice. So can I ask first about what it was like? You know, growing up, you've spoken about having a complicated relationship with food. So can you tell me a bit about that?
So I mean, as a teenager, I was never exposed to any sort of diet in my household. I was really lucky that all of the females in my life pretty much ate very much intuitively. So I was never around like Weight Watchers or Slimming World, which was like the most popular thing.
Lucky you, babes.
I was super lucky in that sense. Yeah. But what it did was kind of, it created this very vulnerable space for me, because when I was a teen, I ended up getting scouted to become a model. And I suddenly went from school where it was tuck shop whispers and a can of Coke every single lunchtime to a modeling situation where people would barely eat, often just pick an undressed salad. And like the fact that I had a ham and cheese panini at lunchtime was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you have that and like don't get fat. Bear in mind, I was like 17 years old. I remember basically moving from ASOS to getting a proper modeling agency. And at the time, ASOS was very much e-commerce, bubble, well protected. And as soon as I got flung into the proper nitty gritty world of the fashion industry, it's when I started to get critiqued by like my agents on my body. And there was one summer that I had gone traveling for like the first time. I went to America. I loved food. So we ate at all the restaurants, tried all the snacks. And I came home and my agency turned around to me and took my Polaroids, sat me down, put the Polaroids there. I'm like, do you know what, Em? We just feel like you're shooting a bit big. Your thighs are shooting a bit big. And it was really strange because I don't know what it was, but it was such a singular moment that changed my whole life. Because from that point, I became obsessed with losing weight. And every single thing that I loved about food was taken away from me at that one point. And food became numbers and calories and balance, and my body was a mass equation. And I remember going home, sitting at the dinner table with my family, like we always did. And I turned around to my mom and I looked at what she'd made me and I said, I can't eat this. Like, your food is making me fat. And to come from such a world where it was free for me, I never ever thought about it, to every single waking moment of my day was sat obsessing over what I should or shouldn't be eating. And the worst thing is, at that time, if I would go into Google or go to social media and be like, how to lose weight, what was available to me was shocking. Frankly shocking. Like the way that diets and nutrition is framed, especially like going back 15 years, it's a whirlwind. And it's what led me to kind of do what I do today, is this pure desire for anyone who ever feels vulnerable when it comes to their health and their journey with nutrition, to be able to basically have a role model that they can turn to and think, oh, do you know what? I really like that approach because it feels comfortable. It feels open. It feels like I want people to feel like they can grow in their own identity with my food and ethos. Yes.
And I think that I so relate to some of the things that you said about your relationship being with food being so shifted by this sudden obsession with being thin. Mm. And I think that when you said, you know, your world becomes so small, and I totally relate to that, that suddenly the enjoyment of food, like growing up in a household, like my mum's an amazing cook as well. And I remember food always being so abundant and like home cooked meals. It suddenly like completely shifts your perspective on what food is, how you eat it, how you enjoy it. It becomes very clinical. It's very methodical. And that enjoyment of what food can really bring us, which you and I both know now, and like the lovely side of food and the amazingness that it can do for us, I think it kind of completely goes. And so to see this shift in yourself now, and I think one of the things that I love most about your content is it is so about like abundance. Mm. It's about color. It's about like plentiful meals. When I look at your page and every recipe that you share, I mean, Saf, my producer, and I were literally talking before you came in. We were like, we love her recipes because they're full. They're like, they're not what one might consider to be quote unquote healthy food. Do you know what I mean by that? And so I think that you're really shifting the perspective on how people can and should be eating to benefit their bodies, their brains, their well-being, in a way that is so different to, as you referenced, 15 years ago and what we knew to be dieting.
Yeah, definitely. But that's my whole ethos. Like, it's why on the front of my cookery book, it's the food you want to eat, designed by a nutritionist.
Yeah.
And that is my biggest thing. Like, whenever I go anywhere, if I walk into a room, so I went to an event last night, and it's not a health or wellness event, and people were like, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a nutritionist. And they instantly go, oh, well, are you one of those nutritionists? Like, what don't you eat? Or I'm not going to tell you what I've just eaten or what I have today. I'm like, I'm not here to judge you. Like, nutrition is not about like less. Nutrition is about nourishment. It's about adding. It's about feeling the best version of yourself. And I'm passionate for the fact that food can actually make you feel amazing. It should make you feel amazing. When every single meal, every single choice that you do should be something to look forward to, not dread. And I've just been there. I've been at the lowest of the lows, like so obsessed. I literally weighed spinach leaves. I became so obsessed to the point now where I'm like, what more can I chuck into this massive bowl of goodness that I know that is just going to make my body feel the best it can.
So let's talk about that healing journey, because it is amazing to see you sat here and to have such an incredible relationship with food now, but I'm guessing that it was a real process to get there. And I think that sometimes we can make it look easy to have a very difficult relationship with food and then suddenly not. So for people that might still be in that place, what were some of the things that you felt really helped you to recover from being in that place of, like you said, like literally weighing spinach? I mean, I've been there as well, so I totally empathize with that. But how did you find that shift?
First of all, like limit your exposures. So what in that environment is pressurizing you? And we have the choice now to choose what we see on social media, choose who we follow. If you're following someone who you constantly is making you feel bad about yourself, just unfollow them, detach yourself from that situation. So it's one of the reasons why I left the fashion industry, because I knew that was my trigger. I could not have my work or my worth be based on a photo of me anymore, because there was so much more to me as well. Like, I loved science, like, and I loved like studying, and I loved learning more. And that shift was really, really useful. So find what you really love and what your passions really are and chase those. Then next would try and shift away from numbers and measuring. So take away the Fitbits, take away the tracking, anything that you feel like you can get a little bit obsessive with, because letting go of that body is a mass equation thing can really help just build up a little bit more understanding about that kind of more intuitive eating side. And I say intuitive eating like lightly, because I don't think it's a very useful tool, especially if someone is going through an eating disorder, because most of the time you can't intuitively eat. You don't know when you're hungry. You don't know when you're full.
I completely agree with, and I think that I also have heard that phrase being thrown around a lot in the wellness and kind of fitness communities.
Intuitively.
Yeah. And I do think that as someone that's come from a very disordered eating background, it feels so throwaway to say to someone who literally has lived their life by MyFitnessPal for however many years, to suddenly go, just turn it off.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as that. And that's why I kind of asked you about that recovery journey, because it's a process. Like, I remember one of the things that I was told was try one day without tracking, because a week, 2 weeks feels way too much and feels so out of your comfort zone. And it is, it's a real thing of control, isn't it? Like, we feel that we need to be in control of every aspect. So it's even just having one meal or one day where you don't track as being that first step on that journey of relinquishing that control.
Because it's like when you build a habit, it's like forming a new habit. So even if I want someone to eat well, I'm like, just do what you do, but maybe add one more vegetable in there. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, you don't have to change everything to change. Change can be this slow ticking kind of stepwise motion. And I also, like, I did a lot of CBT behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And my therapist was amazing at the time. And she was the person who was able to really pull me out that deep dark hole. And it's difficult because I truly now feel like eating disorders are this huge wide spectrum. And sometimes people don't even realize they're in one because it becomes so normalized or they get so used to it. But I always say, like, if you feel like something is taking away from your life more than it's adding to it, then that is a negative situation. So if you are someone who loves being kind of like full animal based and doesn't want to eat any kind of like sugar or carbs, but you're fantastically happy, your mental health is fantastic, you go out with your friends for dinner like all the time, you don't, not thinking about it, great. But if you sit there and isolate yourself and deep down, like, you're almost depriving of yourself of what you truly feel like you want, then it's time to start thinking about, as you said, like, those small changes that we can make to just, like, loosen those shackles that so often that mindset can have over us.
And I think it's such a good point that a lot of this stuff is very normalized. And I think that's one of the problems that we really see, is that definitely in my experience, I was praised for a lot of my behaviors. I'm sure you the same, like, oh, you're so, like, you know, motivated and you're so dedicated disciplined. And I think that a lot of this feedback, especially early on, I think we have seen a bit of a shift, and I definitely see that we're moving into this different paradigm with how we approach health and wellness, and you're leading the charge on that. But I do think that back in the day, a lot of this stuff was so normalized that for a lot of people, like you said, I didn't even realize there was an issue for a long time, you know, until I lost my period and was suddenly like, something's going on here.
Yeah.
Like, I just genuinely thought that I was absolutely, like, Mrs. Dedicated. Yeah. So I do completely relate to that. I think that I would love to hear, you know, you said that you were obsessed with science and you went on to study as a nutritionist at one of the top universities in the UK to do that. So tell me about how you then went to, you know, moving down the path of becoming a nutritionist.
So I was always very kind of like scientific. And before I went into the fashion industry, I was going to go and do like human physiology or biochemistry at uni. That's what I just thought I wanted to do. And it wasn't until I actually had that turbulent relationship with food that I realized, as someone who knows like every single thing about the human body, I knew nothing about nutrition. I didn't have a clue of what my body needed, how I should fuel it, what was kind of like the right balance or like the kind of superfoods that we can incorporate to make us feel our best. And I've always been interested in knowing what I don't know. And that's why I ended up going to study nutrition. But 3 years ago in sixth form, if you would have said, oh, do you want to be a nutritionist? I'm like, that's not a real job. What, telling people to eat their vegetables? Yeah. But now I know like there's so much more to it.
I mean, and you've essentially carved out your own whole career as a nutritionist.
No, fully now, yeah. But like, I genuinely believe that was like my path and my destiny. Mm-hmm. So I went to King's, I got my 3-year BSc, and I started to fall in love with how unique we all are when it comes to our nutrition. And there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. One of my favorite examples for this, and a lot of the research came out of King's, was like twin studies. So you take two people who were genetically identical and you'd both give them the same food and their unique response would be different, which showed us that there is this wider component to our health, which now we realize is pretty much down to our gut microbiome. And that in itself just fascinates me because you're actually more microbe than you are human.
Wow.
So there are more microbial cells in your body than there are human cells.
That's a great stat.
and it's why every single time I make a plate, every single time I tell anyone to make a plate, I'm like, you're not just eating for one, you're eating for two, both you and your gut microbes. And there's a whole area of us which is we're learning more and more about. And that's one of the reasons why I love nutrition.
That is so interesting. And obviously you did study at King's, which is a place that I know is pumping out a hell of a lot of, like, it's Kevin Whelan's there as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pumping out a hell of a lot of stuff in the kind of gut microbiome space and gut health space. And it is an area that is receiving a lot of attention at the moment. And I know that you are releasing a very exciting product in this space. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Because I think when it comes to gut health, we do know that there are two things that are kind of big key components for our gut health. It's the prebiotic foods and it's the probiotic stuff. So first of all, I guess it would be great to understand from a nutritionist what we mean by a gut microbiome for those that might not know, and then what we know are the two kind of big kingpins when it comes to looking after our gut health.
Yeah. So basically your gut microbiome is this whole ecosystem of kind of live bacteria, fungi, and all sorts of other stuff that live inside your gut. But when you eat food, we obviously break it down, we digest it, we absorb the nutrients, but a lot of what is in our food actually needs to be broken down and transformed by our gut microbes. So when we're thinking about even certain things like certain antioxidants in our food need transforming via fermentation by these gut bacteria to actually be these compounds which we can absorb, which are then anti-inflammatory, anti-cancerous, like really health protective. The more we feed and support our gut microbiome with a colourful, diverse diet, the more we get diversity in the kind of species that are in that gut microbiome. And the more diversity we have, we can clearly see a correlation with improved health. So from everything to mental health, to cardiovascular health, to diabetes risk, to kind of skin, everything in between is all kind of dictated by the gut microbiome, which is why it's so important. I always want to say, you will never out-supplement a bad diet. If you are popping every single probiotic and taking every single prebiotic that you can buy in powder or pill form, if your diet is not full of diversity and colour, you're kind of cheating yourself on like the main foundation of what does good gut health mean. Where kind of prebiotic foods come in, these are basically fuel for the gut microbes. So if we think about eating for two, if we're thinking about making sure that every single meal that we're supporting and allowing them to thrive, that's where all the fiber comes in. And fiber isn't this unique entity either. I think we think of fiber and we think of like bran flakes,
yeah,
or just something like really boring. But yeah, fiber is both soluble and insoluble. And I'm not going to get too into that, but the different physiological effects that will have on our body can help things like blood sugar control. It can help fullness and appetite. It can help stimulate all the hormones that help leave us feeling satisfied and content. And then it will also go to the gut microbiome and ferment and allow them to flourish and thrive, which is why it's so important to make sure you're just getting that kind of like nice diversity on every single plate. And so that I think only 9% of us in the UK get the recommended 30 grams of fiber a day.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that can be helpful in that area. And tell me if this is bad advice, but I always think about adding loads of color in, and then yeah, you have that level of like kind of diversity across your food. So I remember my friend who's a doctor was like, try and buy like the colorful tomatoes rather than always getting the red ones, and like kind of quite accessible swaps, I guess. Colourful tomatoes are always three times the price, but you know what I mean? Like where possible, trying to add colour in that doesn't triple your food bill so that you can have that diversity.
Massively so. And colour is normally indicative of these things called polyphenols. Mm. So it's the polyphenols in the kind of colour compounds of our food that then get transformed by our gut microbes, feed them, and also allow us to absorb all of those good stuff. And I always say, purple is one of my favorites. So purple is a source of something called anthocyanins. These are incredibly cardiovascular protective. They help vasodilation, so they actually help blood flow throughout the body. When's the last time you had like VatPat beetroot? 65p from Sainsbury's. Like, so rich in all
Does
of those goodness.
Count?
Aubergine counts, yeah, 100%.
My faves.
Like, and but make sure you obviously eat the skin.
Oh yeah, always.
But that's why, I know, even when you get your broccoli, purple sprouting broccoli. So reds, purples, dark greens, like all of those heavy greens, oranges, yellows, like all of that good stuff is amazing. And then finally, obviously we can have probiotics. Yes. So probiotic foods, all of your live kind of kimchi, sauerkraut, kefir, make sure you're buying them from the fridge aisle. So many people buy kimchi off the shelf. These are heat treated and pasteurized. They contain no live bacteria. And then obviously you can take a probiotic. There's a lot out there on the market, but making sure that you're having one that has the right delivery method. So you're actually getting those live bacteria where they need to go alive, and don't just go off kind of high CFU counts. So sometimes people think more is better. We now know it's the species that is so important. So people need to understand that when you say probiotics, what is in those probiotics is not the same. So you have certain strains which have a whole kind of like book of research behind. Like our probiotic Epitome actually has 450 studies, clinical studies.
Wow.
In total for all the 11 strains that we've chosen. We don't just like stick any random ones in, because there are certain strains which actually have kind of clinical evidence for IBS help, for hormonal health, for recovery from post-infection infection on antibiotics, for example. So it can feel really complicated, but I don't want people to kind of go away from this thinking, oh my goodness, where do I start? It's as simple as adding an extra colour to your meal.
So as cliche as it sounds, the phrase eat the rainbow is actually quite apt.
It is like, it's one of the best nutritional tips I can give anyone. Just eat the rainbow.
I love that. We'll be back after this.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome back to Give Me Strength. One of the things that I really love about your food, and I've sort of touched on this a little bit, but it is your love for food. And yeah. I think it genuinely shines through. And, you know, we know the nutrition space to be quite a polarized one that has many diverse opinions, and some of which can be very opposing as well. For the average person, it can be quite hard to know who to trust mm-hmm. in that space. And I would be really interested to hear how you found being a woman who is incredibly successful in the nutrition space. I guess this is more of a personal question, but have you found that there have been particular challenges that have come from being someone that's, you know, really exploded in terms of their mm-hmm. success, and who is trying to do a lot of good, and who I believe is doing amazingly well, but often that can rub people up the wrong way. Yeah. Like, have you found that?
Do you know what? I've had a couple of like woo-woo nutritionists stitch me on TikTok before and try and like berate what I'm doing. But the reality is, good nutrition is really simple. It's try and eat as much whole foods as possible. Have that nice color and diversity. Make sure you're having a balance of protein, whether it be plant-based proteins and animal-based proteins. Get lots of lovely fiber in. Hydrate, sleep, and that's it. But like, it's not sexy enough. It doesn't sell. It doesn't make these viral clickbait videos. And the actual reality is, when you break down every single one of these videos that goes viral via this like influencer or a health coach, they're all saying the same thing. They're all saying that. And I just do it in a really normal, non-pressurizing way. And just because I like a glass of wine, just because I'll have a Diet Coke on holiday, does not make me a bad nutritionist. And the one thing that I can always promise my audience is that I would never, ever, ever promote anything that would ever put them in danger mm. or negatively harm their health. And until the study comes out, or I can actually go through the research and think, actually, the shift is something that we should be thinking, like being a little bit more aware of, I'm not going to be one of those black and white nutritionists saying never ever have an artificial sweetener again.
But this is where I think it's so clear why you've been successful, is because it's so accessible. Mm. And every time, and Safra and I were saying this, my producers were saying this, is that like one of the things that I really respond to about you, as someone who's been on a bit of a journey themselves with re-loving food, mm-hmm. developing a healthier relationship with their body and with food, I never feel as though when I come to you, I feel bad about what I eat on my plate. You have a very healthy approach, it seems, to how you approach food. And that doesn't mean that you don't have incredibly nutritious meals that you share, But I also love when you go for like your Sunday roast and you're having like starter, main course, dessert.
Yeah.
Like that's normalizing a healthy relationship with food. And I know so many people who I've spoken to who've said the same about you, that like, I just love when someone like eats. Like, I just love it. I'm like, how hard is it to just show that you love food?
Yeah.
And like, you can be a nutritionist and you can give all the advice in the world about the things that, yeah, is great to do, like eat the rainbow, you know, sleep well, don't drink too much alcohol, but at the same time, who genuinely loves food. And I think that that's something that is just so relatable within you.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm so pleased that you kind of like picked that up from me. But me and my friends, my fiance, my family, we live to eat.
Yeah.
And every single time, any birthday, any occasion, Christmas, whatever, always over my house. And I remember my dad makes signs, and he used to cut a massive bit of plyboard, put it over the dining table and like kind of bolt it down to fit everyone around it. So my mum would make this like 10 kilogram lasagna, have like 5 bowls of salad on like on a Saturday, and just everyone would come over and we would sit there and we would all eat.
Yeah.
And there's something so nourishing about that. Like, you can't nourish yourself if you aren't there like mentally enjoying the food that you eat.
But isn't that such a huge component as well as of how we have a good relationship with food? Is that a big component of our relationship with food is the social connection.
Yeah.
It's like when I was growing up, my mum was adamant that we would sit down every evening around the table and have dinner as a family. And I'm from a Jewish background, so like we go to Shabbat dinner and we all sit. Like sometimes there's literally 30 of us around the table, and my grandma will still at 86 years old make food for all of us. And like, food is so social. It brings people together. It has so much more than just being energy in, energy out. And I think that that's where we've gone wrong, is that particularly in the fitness space where I come from, we've oversimplified like the kind of the food equation, let's
say. Or it's
a
cheat meal.
Yeah. And we've complicated it in other ways, so that people are just so confused about something that actually is so much more than just energy in versus energy out. And I think that that's where, you know, we need to be having this conversation, particularly with young girls who follow someone like yourself or me, who are coming up now and who are probably going through all the same things that you and I went through 5-10 years ago. And, you know, hopefully that we are encouraging them to think about food in such a different way, you know?
I just want people to feel free.
Mm.
I want people to be able to explore what health and wellness means to them. I want people to be able to explore healthy eating, and whether that means they can make my glow bowl or they can make my lasagna. Like, I just want to make it fun, accessible, and joyous. And the reason why my cookbook is called So Good is because it's that moment that you sit down with friends, with your family, with your partner, you take that first bite and you look at each other and you say, oh, that is just so good.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. And I love it. And we say it so often. Yeah. And now I'll be at a dinner with my friends and we'll have something, we'll eat it, and we'll look at each other and go, so good.
Well, I'm going to do it now.
But I just think it's such joy is one of the key nutrients of our life. Vitamin J. Don't forget vitamin J.
Oh, I love that. Now, look, I said at the start that you are someone who is unbelievably busy right now. And so fitting in things like healthy meals and the kind of health non-negotiables that you might normally do when you're a bit less busy and have time to become a bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who listen to this who are time poor, but still want to try and include things that make them feel good. So what are kind of your daily or weekly health non-negotiables, the things that you kind of always try and stick to that you know make you feel good?
The number one thing that I always do for myself and always recommend my clients to do is own your morning routine. That morning routine is the opportunity to wake up half an hour earlier, 1 hour earlier. You can steal the day back when you wake up a little bit earlier. So good morning routine. I always get out, especially as it gets lighter in the morning, up and out. Sunlight is nature's caffeine. So don't wear your sunglasses. Try and get as much natural light exposure into your eyes. Go out for a nice 20, 30 minute brisk walk. Come back. I guarantee your day, you'll feel like a different person just from doing that. Then trying to center around like hydration. I often have like my supplement routine in the morning and then a nice big breakfast full of loads of protein and fiber. If you're not a breakfast person, don't worry. Don't have your breakfast. You don't have to do it. Just what works for me. And just doing that and knowing that I've done something for my body honestly just changes my whole mindset throughout the rest of the day. So if I then do have a really busy morning, which means I'm stuck at my desk from pretty much 9 until 2, I have already done that thing for me in the morning. So if you can steal that day, steal that time, it will change your life. I absolutely guarantee it. And then the next thing is, don't seek perfection. Like, if you have to pick up a ready meal, pre-prepared salad, fine. But what can you add to that? Can you maybe like grab that and maybe grab an extra little protein, sprinkle some seeds over the top, add an extra little crumble of feta. If you have some kimchi or sauerkraut sitting in your fridge for those probiotics, stick that on there. Go, we have so many amazing places to get fresh, healthy food from now. So if it does mean a pret or an itsu at lunchtime, like, it doesn't make you a bad person just because you're not organized to like be or have the time to like prep everything. So it doesn't have to be perfect for it to be good for you.
That's such a good point, because I think sometimes people think that if they don't stick to like quote unquote what they believe to be like healthy options, mm-hmm. that they've somehow, and again, like, this is only from what I've heard when I speak to like my clients and stuff, is they've like fallen off the bandwagon. And I think it creates such a difficult mindset with food, yeah. if you feel like you're either on or off. Mm. Again, we could go into that and I won't, but I think that you're so right that we kind of need to scrap what perfect looks like when it comes yeah. to our diet, and instead just try and be a bit more adventurous of like, okay, I'm going to have this and this, but what can I add in that's also great for yeah. this? Or, you know, and I think that kind of mindset really opens up so many doors in terms of how free you then feel with your food choices.
Massively so. And I always recommend as well, have at least 5 recipes under your belt that you know off by heart. So I have like my 5 lazy recipes.
Oh my God, give us one.
So number one.
My
stuffed pittas. So breads, I keep in my freezer,
yeah.
bang into the air fryer. Then I'll always have like a pre-cooked protein to go. So I'll always have a tin of tuna in my cupboard. I'll always have maybe some pre-cooked roast chicken. So I'll mix that with yogurt, herbs, spring onion, loads of diced cucumber, olives, tomatoes, shove it in the pitta, bam, lunch. Then the next one is my one pot salads. So I don't make any dressing. I stick all the dressing ingredients into the salad pot, mixy-mixy, often to take the big metal bulge in my desk. I don't shoot those ones.
So like, good.
And then third one would be my one pot Thai noodles.
Okay.
So stick the noodle nest, the Thai curry paste, the coconut milk, whatever veggies I have in my fridge, stick the lid on. I'll often go and shower or take my makeup off during that time. I'll come back, open the lid, and it's done. Then anything in like one pot, like pastry dishes. So if I'm able to like saute something, stick it in a blender, mix it into cooked pasta. I do like a super greens pasta, which is absolutely brilliant. And then my third one would literally just be like convenience food. So yeah. that would be pre-cooked grains, pre-cooked grains, anything that's like quickly grab and go. You can microwave a sweet potato in 5 minutes.
Love sweet potato.
So
as well.
Sweet potato, protein, add your little veggies and stuff, and they will always be my 5 go-tos.
And even when you say it like that, it does just make it feel really accessible. I think that, you know, often we can overcomplicate foods. And also I think like sometimes you're right, like having those recipes that your go-tos, having stuff in the cupboard.
Don't think about it.
Yeah. yeah. And yeah. not being afraid to like have a tin, you know, a tinned can of tuna yeah. or things like that. And not everything has to be super fresh. And, you know, I think that's a really good piece of advice. I always find as well, when it comes to those recipes, you know, have the meals as well that you just know you really like, especially if, you know, you've got a busy week. Like, there's nothing better than coming home and like knowing you've got a good tea. Like,
so good.
It's just so good.
Oh, I love it. Tea.
I honestly, knowing you've got a good tea on the table, it's like, oh, it can be a game changer. I think I would love to ask you about, you know, if you had to encapsulate, you've obviously spoken about your book, the product Epitome that you are bringing out. What would you say like your kind of nutrition ethos is? What do you want to leave as like, well, not leave as your legacy. It sounds like you're going somewhere, but what would you say that you're kind of ethos is around how you approach nutrition?
I want nutrition to feel normal. I want nutrition to feel no different to when you would make a lasagna or a cottage pie or like whatever your mum would like make you for dinner. You wouldn't think about it. And I want to bring nutrition and healthy eating into people's homes that is just part of their day. And the thing that gives me the most joy is when I get a message from someone who's like, we literally make your recipes 5 to 6 times a week. Like, we only use your recipes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner now. You are like, and we feel amazing for it. And that is what I love. And that's what I always try to do. Because every single recipe I create from my brain, thinking about what do I want to eat today? Like, what do I want for breakfast? I don't really have a lot of time, but I want something that's like tasty and nourishing. Like, let me put that together. And that's why I think I met this like really amazing sweet spot between good food, good nutrition, but not just eating nutrients, actually sitting down with a proper bowl of tea.
With a vitamin J in there.
With a vitamin J.
Love it. Now, look, my final question is really around what we can expect from you. You've gone from strength to strength in your career. It's been so exciting to see you grow and do so many amazing things. But I'd love to know, like, what you have coming up or anything exciting that you're really wanting to do, you know, in the next sort of 5-10 years.
So book number 2, maybe in the process.
So exciting.
I don't stop. Yeah. I don't really want to stop. The second thing is a bit of like a passion of mine that I really want to start working on. And that's getting nutrition and proper food technology into schools, because I truly believe there is this huge, like, so many nutritionists can't cook. And so many people, when they get to uni, don't know how to put together a healthy meal. So how do you actually teach people the fundamentals of nutrition, but in a normal way? I don't want just them to just sit down and learn about vitamin C and vitamin D. Like, we need to teach people how to cook healthy, balanced, normalized meals. So that is in the next 5 or so years. Like, I truly, really want to make a difference in that.
And that's the legacy, baby. I love it. Thank you so much. It's been such a joy to have you on. I'm honestly so happy we got to make it work, because, like I said, I've been a huge fan for a long time. And I wish you all the best with book number 1. And I wish you all the best with book number 2 as well. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I'll be back on Friday for my Ask Alice. Again, if you have any questions for that, send us an email to the email that's in the show notes. If you are enjoying the podcast and you'd like to hear a little more from me, I am so excited to announce that I have just written my latest book, Give Me Strength, How I Turned My Back on Restriction, Nurtured the Body I Love, and How You Can Too. It comes out in July and is available for pre-order now. And it's the book I wish I had read when I was really struggling with body image and exercise addiction. And so if this sounds like something that might help you, you can find the link to get your copy in the show notes now. I'll be back next Wednesday for my next episode, and I look forward to speaking to you then. Give Me Strength is an Insanity Studios production.